Stirring the Pot is presented by Naturopathica Healing Arts Center and Spa. For over 15 years, Naturopathica has been the Hamptons' source for holistically soothing massages and facials, complemented by their complete line of all-natural skincare and anti-aging products. Information available at 631-329-2525 or naturopathicaspa.com. And by East Hampton Dental Group, a multi-specialty dental practice with a caring, experienced team led by Dr. Mambrino and Dr. Venn. They provide many specialties of integrative dentistry all in one location. The state-of-the-art office is located in the heart of East Hampton Village. Information available at 631-324-6800 and ehdental.com. With additional support from Ross School, serving students in pre-nursery through grade 12 and beyond. With campuses in East Hampton and Bridgehampton, Ross offers a global curriculum in science, math, arts, and humanities, competitive athletics, travel, and college placement, and a wellness program featuring Ross Cafe's regional, organic, seasonal, and sustainable cuisine. More information on Ross School, including its summer camp and lifelong learning classes at ross.org. Hi, I'm Stephanie Sachs, your resident culinary nutritionist. As a professional chef with a master's in nutrition, I love to talk food and health. So thanks for tuning in. Stirring the Pot is a co-production of WPPB and STP Productions. And this show would not be possible without the generous support of Naturopathica Spa, East Hampton Dental Group, and the Ross School. My deepest gratitude to Nancy Atlas for writing the theme song for Stirring the Pot. Our guest expert today is Jason Wiener, executive chef and owner of Almond Restaurant in Bridgehampton, New York City, and L&W Oyster Bar in New York City. And Vicki Lippman of Vicki's Veggies in Amagansett, and Kathy Burns from the East Hampton Food Pantry. They'll be here for anyone who eats. Here with me now is James Blueweiss, manager and Stirring the Pot executive producer.
Pleasure to be here. I'm excited to hear what our guests have to say.
Yeah, me too, on some very important topics. Also, Geir Magnussen, creative director and technical wizard.
Stephanie, thank you for having me again on your show. I'm so excited. This is like my third show with you.
I can't do without you, though, because you do all the technical stuff.
Oh, right. Well, thank you. Well, it's a delight to be here anyway.
And you add a lot of color to the picture here. So my blog this week, I like to open the show with my blog. It's called Food Wasteland because I'm a little bit obsessed with food waste. I know that Jim read my blog. I want to just tell you why I was inspired to write on food waste. I recently joined a global food waste campaign called Think, Eat, Save. It's through the United Nations, and the National Resource Defense Council is part of that, and some amazing, amazing partners. I'm pretty particular about food waste, and when it comes to food waste, I try to impart a lot of information to the clients that I work with, the groups that I teach, on how to minimize waste in general.
I was actually pretty amazed that, you know, the food waste, when you started talking about it, you started pointing out, you're like, Geir, do you know that if you throw out half a hamburger, this goes to Jason as well, being that he's a chef, that if you throw out a half a hamburger, that's the equivalent of you taking a 60-minute long shower when it comes to water waste.
Right. And you know, it's interesting here. I went to this wonderful event this past weekend called Changing the Way We Eat, a TEDx event in Manhattan. In front of me, I have two books. One is called A Place at the Table by Peter Pringle, The Crisis of 49 Million Hungry Americans and How to Solve It. And then the other book here is called American Wasteland, How America Throws Away Nearly Half of Its Food. And what's so funny is we throw away half of our food and we have a hunger issue right here at home. Forget the global issue. Jim, I'm sure you have some pressing questions about the topic.
Well, it was a great blog, Stephanie.
Thank you.
It's an important subject. Quite frankly, I'm sure it's new to many people, the discussion of food waste. For years, we've all been led to feel guilty if we don't recycle. Recycling's been the big subject, you know,
Absolutely.
Separating your bottles, separating your paper. It's actually easier to be conscious of food waste and what you could do about it than recycling. So I just wanted to talk about that because what's your opinion on that? Like, recycling's actually harder to do, and any one of those 10 things in your blog are easier to do and make more sense economically, right to your pocketbook.
Right.
You save money.
Absolutely.
Environmentally.
Mm-hmm.
And socially.
I think the easiest thing, the one thing that I can say is plan. Because if you plan, you're not going to waste as much. You're going to think about what you're buying. You're not going to buy in larger quantities. And just buy things in smaller quantities in general. But the blog, which you can sign up for the blog at stephaniesachs.com. That's Stephanie with an F, not a PH. You can check it out. But there are some great tips there, compliments of the National Resource Defense Council, actually. So why reinvent the wheel when so many people are talking about it and offering amazing, amazing tips?
I loved your compost tip. I loved that William. I actually love William Sonoma, by the way. But that thing, it looks so good to have in your countertop. But that's to compost, which,
right.
So it's simple and it's not that. So no excuses anymore, people. You know, just go to William Sonoma and you can buy it.
You can buy it, yeah, these chic composters that go on top of the counter. I want to jump to my good brand of the week. I actually have right in front of me Rick's Picks, which are the people's pickle. And I bring pickles because I have two kids. They literally, before bed, they want a bowl of pickles, you know, after their dessert. After their dinner, after their dessert, then they want pickles. And it's this big thing. Everyone loves pickles in my house. Rick is actually a friend of mine back when I lived in Brooklyn. He started this company. He used to invite me over to his house to taste pickles, but I just never made it. And then he started this amazing company. I used to buy a jar of these pickles, sit in my car, and eat them when I was pregnant with my kids. But they're amazing. What I love about them, if you go to the supermarket, a lot of pickles these days are a really bright yellow. They're yellow because there's food dye in them. These are pretty pure pickles. There are a lot of pure pickles on the market, but I love his really handmade touch.
Can we open it up?
Yes, open it up.
Take a look at JB's face. He's so excited.
I know. We can pass
He actually
them around
loves
and taste
pickles.
Them.
He absolutely loves pickles.
They're really unbelievable.
Gary, would you like one?
No, thank you. I've had my pickle dose today.
Jason?
Jason's sitting here.
Dig He's going
to. Well, you know, this actually goes to the. To what you're talking about, because these curing and charcuterie and pickling, these are ancient preservation techniques where you took product that an instant before refrigeration would have gone to waste, but this preserves them and holds them, and it's kind of a happy accident that it ends up also making an amazing product.
No, and it's so true because it plays to the whole point of natural preservation,
sure.
Which is just, you know, salt or lemon or vinegar, and we're using all of these chemicals to preserve foods when really we've been preserving through canning, through burying foods, through doing so many interesting things over the years, and we need to get back to a lot of that to make some good food. We're going to be back in a moment with Jason and get into some pretty deep conversation.
We're going
to the weekly field report.
Stirring the Pot is presented in part by East Hampton Dental Group, a multi-specialty dental practice with a caring, experienced team led by Dr. Mambrino and Dr. Venn. They provide many specialties of integrative dentistry all in one location. The state-of-the-art office is located in the heart of East Hampton Village. Information available at 631-324-6800 and ehdental.com.
On this week's blogs, Stephanie wrote about food waste, so I wanted to ask people what they thought about food waste. So I hit the streets one more time, and here's what people said. When I say the phrase food waste, what comes to mind?
Eating at the cafe at the Ross School. In other words, whatever you're not finishing is considered to be food waste, but at the school, it's all composted.
Rotten vegetables that you don't quite use. I think it's just a problem of organization, okay, and making a commitment to use what you purchase.
People throwing out good food or just leftovers.
Do you ever think about food waste?
I do. I compost pretty much all of my vegetables and eggs and stuff like that. And I try to make food that's just going to be used up or reinvented in the next couple of days. And then if not, it gets tossed. But I really try not to have waste.
It's very hard for me to throw food. So I keep it until it's rot, and then I throw it.
Actually, you eat a lot of leftovers. You know, don't try to, you know, save it for the next day and eat it for lunch. So try not to throw out too much food. And it doesn't last that long in the fridge to go bad, actually. Not to buy too much and keep it in the fridge. So it's, no, we don't waste a lot of food, actually.
The European model is to shop daily. But we don't do that here because that means gas consumption and driving too far. So we shop weekly. And when you shop weekly, you have management issues. But that's really the issue. If we shop daily, it would be a different story.
If you haven't had the chance to read Stephanie's blog, go to stephaniesachs.com. That's Stephanie with an F.
To Stirring the Pot on WPPB 88.3, a one-hour radio talk show focusing on food, nutrition, and health. I'm Stephanie Sachs, your resident culinary nutritionist. And that was the weekly field report by Geir Magnusson.
Yeah. I love the point that you made about the European. When I lived in Italy, we used to go to the market every day, and you didn't go to the same market for the same thing. So in other words, if you needed to go to poultry, you went to one market, and then you went to the next pool over. So it was very much like what she said, is you buy what you want for that day.
Which I think is a really important point about the American culture and how we don't operate that way. And with me in studio, you heard from him before, is Jason Weiner, executive chef and owner of Almond Restaurant in Bridgehampton, New York, and L&W Oyster Bar in New York. Jason, thanks for being here. And we're hitting so many topics here. I know that you are so focused in on farm to table, freshness of cuisine, quality of cuisine, how the food is made. I'd love for you to talk to me a little bit about that and how you got into it.
My route into the business was actually a little bit circuitous. I actually went to, you know, my dad's a lawyer and my mom's a teacher, and I grew up in Park Slope. So, you know, I was going to go to 4 years of college and do something academic or something, or professional. And I went to college for a year, and it just kind of wasn't for me. I took a year off, and at that point, I didn't really know what I was going to do. And Regine's on 59th and Park, old school French place. I was just looking through the paper. I was like, I kind of like food, continental cuisine. What's that? I think I know what that is. Anyway, I fudged a resume, and and it happened that that the cooks were on strike. So I ended up, I was actually a scab, which is like a Park Slope kid, a weird way to start. But I ended up being thrown on the line, and I was taught discipline and their basic technique. And
did you love to cook prior to that?
I did. I was a latchkey kid, had a couple of older brothers. I was already kind of, and food was something that was important in our house. You know, and from there, I was at China Grill in 1987, where I kind of started to learn about ingredients and technique. I moved out to California, and I was in San Francisco sort of right the beginning or in the middle of the sort of farm-to-table movement.
Right.
It was an amazing experience, and people bringing us mushrooms to our back door, and baymen and fishermen, you know, bringing, you know, stuff without. There was no middleman.
So you were hooked before it was really a movement.
A little bit. And I made some other stops along the way, but then we came out here 2001, and we've been out here for about 12 years now, and been fortunate enough to make some really amazing connections with some great growers and baymen. And the Hamptons, while it's, you know, kind of a playground for the rich and famous and whatever else it is, it is and always has been a farming and fishing community. It's an
Absolutely.
Agricultural community.
Totally.
And I'm just really proud to be part of that.
That's great. Now, one thing I read when I was reading some of the materials about you is your whole thing is straightforward food.
Yeah.
I love that.
There's been a lot of talk of chefs being artists, and I don't know. I mean, my sense is that that the role of the chef is to be a craftsman and to let sort of put the ingredients on the plate and try to get the hell out of the way. You know, that's just what I try to do. You know, I think there is a role for avant-garde cuisine. I think it's a lot of fun, and I like eating it, but that's just not what I do. What we do is ingredient-driven, and I just try to keep it as honest as possible.
I love that, because in the space that I'm in, there's so much mixed information in the food and nutrition space, and my whole thing is just straightforward, no-nonsense nutrition,
sure,
trying to cut through a lot of the garbage, and let me just deliver it to you as it is. That just really struck me when I read some of the materials. You're just doing really straightforward food. Pretty much a majority of your stuff comes within a 7-mile radius.
About 90% of our produce, you know, during the growing season out here. You know, I'm a city kid. So it's a really amazing opportunity to have that. I live in East Hampton. So on an average day on the way to work, I'll stop at Balsam Farm, who leaves me stuff at Eco. He has a little plot there. Then I'll go over to Marilee Foster on Sag Road. Then I'll come up the road and go to the Pikes. And then I'm at work. And then maybe I'll stop off at Art Ludlow to get some cheese, and I'm ready to go for the day. It's really incredible.
Yeah. It really is. Going to this TED conference, I mean, I was learning about all of this stuff many, many years ago. It was just a reiteration of a lot of what I already know, but it's fascinating to see how this movement, this food movement and conscious cuisine is really, it's starting to spread.
Right. You know, it's amazing that it has to actually be a movement in quotes, because
right,
it's so intuitive, isn't it? And it's how we began. And that we've come so far from that we have to get back to it and have a capital M movement attached to it. It's kind of silly, but that's where we are.
It is silly, and it's because people have become so disconnected.
Sure.
And we can go into historically the multiple reasons why people are disconnected.
Right.
And that's pretty much what my thesis was on. It's all about bringing people back. I'm really curious, since we're on this topic of food waste, what do you guys do with your excess at the restaurant?
We have a couple of models. The restaurants in the city, our garbage company actually composts for us. which is great. There has already been recycling, of course, so we leave out three containers. We leave out all our food waste, our recyclables, and then everything else, actually four, because then we also have cardboard sorted as well. So that's what we do in the city. It's pretty straightforward. There's a compost operation kind of already, and there's a profit motive there, because obviously, which is important. You know, a lot of these issues, if there was, it's more expensive to sort of do it the right way a lot of the time.
I know, but and harder.
But as far as this goes, I mean, we're actually saving, you know, there's actual profit motives because there's less actual garbage going to the landfill, less carting company has to pay, and less we have to pay at the end of the day. Now, out here, it's a little bit, ironically, it's a little more difficult. So what we used to do, we used to have another location off of Montauk Highway where we had a lot of space, and we had a little garden back there, and we were just composting on the property. It was simple enough.
Right.
Now that we're in town, we don't really have that opportunity. What I'm planning on doing this summer is my wife, Amon Zygmunt, is on the board at Eco Farm, and we're going to try to work out a situation where we can actually move our composting operation to them. They'll just basically take
That's
our
great.
Raw stuff. I'm also going to talk to Harry Ludlow, who has pigs on Mecox, try to maybe get all our slop to the pigs. And the other thing out here, we have, you know, I'm not too into high-tech stuff, but we have a cryovac machine where we just basically seal everything we have.
I mean, that's great.
Yeah, which helps. I mean, again, there's a profit motive. We don't want to waste stuff.
And you like leftovers, so you bring stuff home from the restaurant,
There's
too.
That, too. Yeah. I mean, I do a lot of my shopping for the house from the restaurant. So.
We won't tell anybody, though.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm my partner.
I actually think that's a good thing, and I commend you for what you're doing and to taking these first steps, because, like, one of the guys that I interviewed on the street, he had two kids that went to the Raw School, and there they obviously do composting. So because the kids are doing it, now the parents are doing
yes.
it. So I guess you
right.
have to, you know, you integrate it and you have to start somewhere. So
right. I mean, composting at home, it's really therapeutic, composting at home. And we compost at home. It's like fun to take the stuff and put it in the thing and watch with the comp. Oh, look, it's sort of starting to feel warm in there.
Right.
It's fun, you know. It's
a science experiment for the kids.
Right? Yeah, totally.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. In New York, I just want to bring in City Harvest. Do you work with them at all?
We do. Yeah, we do. Again, we don't yield a lot of waste. We try, you know,
right.
we pretty much, as far as whole foods, as far as foods that bread, a lot of these things we find a second use for, whether it be bread pudding or breadcrumbs or whatever, just to give that example. But we don't, you know, again, there's a profit motive not to waste,
right.
you know, which is good. Because a lot of these things, like I said, the profit motive is so reversed, you know.
Yep.
I mean, it's cheaper to buy garbage food and give it to your customers than it is to get the real deal. Of course, out here, because there's no middleman with all my producers, as far as produce goes, it's cheaper to get produce direct from Pike and other producers.
I'm telling
you.
Yeah. I like Jason Weiner. Conscious consumption. I like this.
With additional support from Ross School, serving students in pre-nursery through grade 12 and beyond, with campuses in East Hampton and Bridgehampton, Ross offers a global curriculum in science, math, arts, and humanities, competitive athletics, travel, and college placement, and a wellness program featuring Ross Cafe's regional, organic, seasonal, and sustainable cuisine. More on Ross, including its summer camp and lifelong learning classes, at ross.org.
You're listening to Stirring the Pod on WPPB 88.3, a one-hour radio talk show focusing on food, nutrition, and health. And I'm Stephanie Sachs, your resident culinary nutritionist. So here in studio with me is Jason Weiner of Almond Restaurant. I want to start this brief segment out with why my pot has been stirred this week. Every week, there's something that kind of gets me. I'm reading so much about food and nutrition, and there's sometimes one or two facts that really stands out. And at this TEDx conference this weekend, Gary Hirschberg from Stonyfield Farms spoke. This is what he said. Globally, more people die of too much food rather than too little. And that's a fact. The reality is that the biotech industry, who is behind genetic modification of our foods, wants us to believe that they're doing this to solve world hunger. And so if we don't start taking action and educating, this paradigm is not going to shift. And so I'm curious, is there anything that stirred your pot this week?
Well, I mean, I think going to what you're saying, I mean, moderation is a big part of sort of what we do, of what our mission is. And, you know, I don't think it's sort of part of the problem. And it also goes to technique. I mean, too much of anything, too much salt, too much butter, too much of a spice or ingredient that you really like a lot.
I mean, too many carrots.
Exactly. To really, you know, and it's sort of when I was first learning to cook, a chef said to me, sometimes the most important ingredient, the one you leave out. In other words, know when to stop and know when to pull back. There's a lot to be said for subtlety. You know, I think us chefs, there's a line from the Hippocratic Oath that kind of always jumps out at me. First, do no harm. What we're doing, I mean, we're restaurants and cooking, it's a lot about community, but on balance, we're not curing cancer and we're not sort of coming up with a solution for world peace. At least we can do is sort of don't screw up things more than they're already screwed up. And right. I think that goes to a sustainable path.
Well, you know, it's funny. One time I got into this conversation with my older son and I was going away to work for a week and he was upset with me. And I said, you know, Jack, I need to tell you that you're the luckiest little boy in the world. He's like, what do you mean, Mom? I said, well, your mommy gets to go out there and do what she loves and talk about, you know, food and how people can use it to get well and feel better. And I get to put my head down on my pillow every night knowing that I've made a bit of a difference and I haven't done any harm. That makes me happy. So you have a happy mommy. So you're saying that I should love what I do, Mom? Yeah, I think you should. And you're best off not doing harm in what you choose to do. And I think that's to a really, really important point, that food is to nourish, and so much of our food harms. And as a chef myself, I can attest to the fact that when you do food, you want to make it minimalistic, and in turn, it will be health supportive.
At the end of the day, and I think there needs to be a strain of honesty through whatever it is you're doing. And again, I think it's the simpler and the more straightforward it is, the better it's going to end up being.
I agree. Jim, do you have any questions for
Well,
Jason?
I could just say that I've been to Almond, and I think it's excellent and delicious. And this whole subject about keeping it simple, I mean, you do that with your ingredients, like you talked about where you source them from. And I just want to commend you because you have an excellent restaurant with delicious food. And for all those people out there that haven't been to Almond, they should check it out. One of the things I wanted to mention, Jason, was both you and your business partner, Eric Lemonides, is that his name?
Eric Lemonides.
You both have food names in your surname, right?
That, you know, actually, that's never been pointed out to us, but you're right. Yeah,
and
to Jim to point it out.
And you even married a woman with an edible name.
This is all true. I think you're going somewhere.
So
here. Keep going.
My question of the day is, do you attribute that to how you ended up in this business?
I think there might have been kind of like the subliminal advertising in the 70s. I think there might have been something. I think there's something there.
That's why we keep Jim around.
Yep. For these unique observations, I guess. But no, it is a curious thing, isn't it?
It is indeed. And my beautiful wife, Amon Zygmunt, who we sort of
She's listening right now because you're giving her kudos left and right.
She was there with us at the beginning when we got the restaurant going, and she continues to be part of it, but she has her own career in her own right. And yes, Eric Lemonides, I guess before, like his dad, Eric's dad, who actually went by George Lemon when they were shortening names and sort of, you know, just because it was easy to pronounce and whatnot. But and of course, Wiener, yes. Thank you for pointing that out.
Did you get a lot of, like, Wiener schnitzel when you were a kid?
Well, my brother likes to say the last original Wiener joke you heard was about in the second grade. So whatever you can throw at me won't be anything new.
I just love that. That was good, Jim.
Oh, thanks, Steph.
So I wanted to ask you, too. I just have, being the nutritionist that I am,
sure.
When you have people come into the restaurant and they, because I'm always dealing with clients who go to restaurants, they don't ask any questions about the food. And I always try to tell them, you have a right to know what's in the food that you're eating. And if you have a food allergy, you need to talk to your server. You need to talk to the chef. I said, and if they're not willing to talk to you, then out the door.
I'll say that, you know, we put our servers, before our servers get on the floor, we make sure that they're really familiar with the food that we're doing. We put up two or three dishes every day at the meeting and talk about them at length. We have our waiters trail with us, actually work with us in the kitchen for a week before they get on the floor. So it's important for us that, I mean, they're the middleman, they're the ambassador, and they need to be able to have a fluid and fluent conversation with regard to what we're doing back there. And it's one of my pet peeves when I go to a restaurant and the waiter just doesn't seem to be looped into what exactly he's serving, because
right.
He's the one who's serving it. I mean, that's the problem with restaurants. That's the difference between having your mom or a relative cook you dinner for Thanksgiving in someone's house. There's that inherent disconnect that's created by that layer, which is the waiter. So it's so important that your server does know exactly what the product is about and it can have a conversation with the customers about it. I agree. It's a very important deal.
So as a chef, because the big joke growing up for me was I always asked too many questions. And so everybody around me always said, well, you know what they're going to do is they're going to cook your food and then they're going to spit on it in the kitchen. And so,
yeah.
You know, I outed myself from the restaurant world early on. So I'm curious if you have somebody who asks a lot of questions and you get their food back. How do you handle that?
I'm certainly not in this business for the money. I'm in this business to create great experiences for people.
Right.
That's really what it's about. This is a people business. Do I grumble underneath my breath if somebody has a couple of special requests and, you know, we're about to do 300 covers and, you know, I've gotten 3 hours of sleep and it's 4th of July weekend?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, I'll grumble under my breath. But we're without the customers, we'd be nowhere.
Right.
Would we be?
In the end, you have to do it. So a huge thank you to Jason for being here.
Thank you. This has been a lot of fun.
Oh, no. And hopefully you'll hang around with our next guest coming from the East Hampton Food Pantry.
Me and Jim are going to be in the peanut gallery.
Exactly. Where we belong.
where you belong. So thanks, Jason. And definitely check Almond out. I'm going to have to go there myself because I actually haven't been. I spend a lot of time cooking at home. So I'm going to have to start to get out a little bit more. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with our next guest. Stirring the Pot is presented by Naturopathica Healing Arts Center and Spa. For over 15 years, Naturopathica has been the Hampton source for holistically soothing massages and facials, complemented by their complete line of all-natural skincare and anti-aging products. Information available at 631-329-2525 or naturopathicaspa.com. You're listening to Stirring the Pot on WPPB 88.3, a one-hour radio talk show focusing on food, nutrition, and health. And I'm Stephanie Sachs, your resident culinary nutritionist. So I'm going to open up this segment with my favorite food experience of the week. And I keep referring to this TEDx event that I went to on Saturday, and Jim came with me. And I want to describe what this experience was like, because there was a wonderful conference, and then we had a break for lunch, and about probably 200 people went into this large room, and there were big tables set up. And the Cleaver Company, Mary Cleaver, who has been doing this farm-to-table cuisine for ages before it was any kind of quote-unquote movement, she was the caterer. She made this delicious vegan chili and cornbread. And then there was, I think, pulled pork from Neiman Ranch. Mm. Let's see, what else? We had wild sumac. There was this delicious coleslaw. And it was amazing. I was sitting at a table with one of my culinary idols, Michelle Nichon, who does some amazing work in this space. Gary Hirschberg of Stonyfield Farms and the president of Neiman Ranch. And it was just really neat being with all of these people, being able to talk about food and break bread together.
And that lunch was so good. Who says nutritious food doesn't have to taste good? That was like one of the best lunches I ever had.
Well, that's what I try to do, and I think clearly Jason does, is make food taste delicious and also be nutritious at the same time. In studio now with me, it's my dear friend Vicki Lippman of Vicki's Veggies, everybody, in Amagansett, and Kathy Burns, who is this amazing do-gooder. It's unbelievable. From the East Hampton Food Pantry. Thank you guys so much for being here, because what you're doing is just remarkable. I'd love to know more about it. Vicki, I know that you've just grown up in this world of food and growing food and selling food, just farm-fresh food. And it's just the fiber of who you are.
Yeah, you were talking about the movement before, and it's really something that I grew up in. I mean, to me, it's just something that's normal and something that my kids take for granted, because my grandfather was a fisherman, and so was my father, and we had Vicki's Veggies. I started it when I was 11 years old. So for me to go out and pick a head of lettuce and tomatoes and then have my father put fish on the table is normal. It's something that is so healthy, and everyone should really be doing it.
It's really true. Yeah. But what's so interesting is you give a lot of your time to the East Hampton Food Pantry, and you co-chair with Kathy. And Kathy, your background is really, I mean, it's commendable what you do. You wrote me this beautiful little synopsis, and I'd love for you to just say how you got involved.
Sure. Well, thank you, Stephanie. Thanks for having me. One of the first things I did was, I've been in housing. I do affordable housing for the last 21 years in the town of East Hampton. So I see a lot of people who don't have a lot of money and who need to watch every penny. Growing up in a family of 12, I think that helped me as well. I grew up, my mother always called me the bleeding heart. Second grade, I can remember going to the nuns of our Catholic school and telling them that we needed a Thanksgiving basket. And they went to my mother and said, Kathy has come to us. And why is that? We didn't know that you were having such a hard time. And she said, oh, Kathy's my bleeding heart. When she grows up, she'll probably be working with the poor. And so I kind of see that as why I'm doing what I do. I feel very fortunate every day, like you mentioned before, Stephanie, working with people and making a difference. Every day I make a difference in my life. And every day I go to bed knowing that something is different. And working at the food pantry was a segue to working with the affordable housing. First, I started in the housing. And when I went to the churches, they were looking for a new home. And I thought, what a great place for a food pantry to be, but at a senior citizen affordable housing complex. They don't have their own transportation. They're very limited on their income. The other part that I didn't mention was that they also volunteer, which makes them feel worthwhile. Every day they get up and they're helping at the food pantry.
And that's so important, empowering people.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes them feel good. It makes us feel good. The day I met Vicki, I'll never forget, she came into the food pantry. And the day she came in, we just clicked. And it was like, we knew we could work
together. Who doesn't click with Vicki?
This is true.
Thank you. Well, what really bothered me was, here I've lived, I mean, my family's been in Amagansett since 1903, okay?
Wow.
I never realized that there were people in our community that were hungry. And I read an article in the paper saying that there were kids in our community going to school without food. So I was just so upset. So I started a food drive, and that's when I met Kathy, and I started volunteering, and then we just really started doing a lot of fundraising together.
That's unbelievable. Now, what I want to understand, and I want our listeners to understand, is how do you decipher between a food pantry and a soup kitchen, let's say?
Well, the food pantry itself, we give people the food to make their own meals.
Okay.
Because at a soup kitchen, you get one meal if you go there. Mm-hmm. You know, some soup kitchens are set up with more, but on the East End, there's not many soup kitchens. So with the food pantry, we give 2 to 3 days worth of food that we think that they're going to be able to use. One of the things when Vicki came on board, and I think she could probably speak more to it, we decided, because we were growing so much, that we needed to make a cut in some of the food that we were giving. And so, I believe on Vicki's suggestion, we found that meat isn't really a staple that people need in their diet every single day.
No, absolutely. And I will tell you as a nutritionist that they don't.
And so we thought there are other ways of getting protein. And with Vicky's background, we decided, why don't we start looking into the local farm stands and start purchasing fruits and vegetables so that we could make sure that at least people were getting those fresh fruits and vegetables every day and that that's critical to their life.
That's amazing. We're going to take a quick break on fruits and vegetables and farm stands and go to the Edible Minute with Brian Hallweil, and then we'll be back with you guys to finish this conversation. This is awesome.
Local wine has been on our minds, not just because we're putting together our wine-focused spring issue, but because, as readers of Edible East End will know, we believe that eating local is never so enjoyable as when you're drinking local. Last week, Long Island Wine Country kicked off Winterfest, a six-week celebration of music and wine that runs through the end of March. Wineries on both the North and South Forks will host live jazz and offer all sorts of other excuses to tour Long Island Wine Country. We know drinking wine can be good for your health. Cornell scientists have shown that Long Island wines, because of our humid climate, have record high levels of resveratrol and other health-conferring phytochemicals found in wine. Among the other benefits of drinking wine raised nearby is you can stroll through vineyards resting under winter's blanket and relax with friends while you taste through a flight of Merlot blends. Long Island Wine Country celebrates its 40th anniversary this year, and in that time, winemaking has transformed our local landscape and culture. Wine grapes rival potatoes as the biggest crop on Long Island, and our 50 wineries are a fount of imbibable creativity, yielding a rainbow of food-friendly wines. One winery, Sparkling Point, is devoted entirely to sparkling wines. Channing Daughters in Bridgehampton makes 8 different rosés. Long Island wineries have helped birth several distilleries on Long Island and the region's first ciders. Some say Long Island Wine Country has even reached a tipping point, celebrated and poured on Long Island, in New York City, and beyond. Long Island Wine Country was recently named one of America's top 10 wine regions to vacation in. And the evening of his inauguration, President Obama and the First Lady poured a Bedell Cellars Red at their celebratory banquet. So seize this chance to explore Long Island Wine Country with friends. Try new vintages before anyone else. Pick up a case at a discount and hear live music. Winterfest runs through the end of March. To find all the participating wineries, visit liwines.com. I hope you will raise a glass to our region and pour Long Island wine tonight. This is Brian Hallweil of Edible East End. You can learn even more about drinking local at edibleeastend.com.
You're listening to Stirring the Pot on WPPB 80.3, a one-hour radio talk show focusing on food, nutrition, and health. I'm Stephanie Sachs, your resident culinary nutritionist. And I think I want to start drinking wine after I heard that. Very interesting.
I know.
I'm not much of a drinker, but now I want to go to all the wineries. So thanks to Brian and to Edible East End. And here we are in studio with Kathy Burns and Vicky Lippman, East Hampton Food Pantry. And I want to continue this conversation because I want to talk statistics with you guys now. And how many, you're servicing the town of East Hampton. And so I'm curious, how many families do you serve a week? How do you calculate how many families are really going hungry out here?
Well, what we do is we have people sign in every week. Because we accept money from our food, from Long Island Cares and Island Harvest, and they get money trickling down from the government. They ask that we sign in everybody who comes into the pantry, which is great because it does give us our statistics. For the month of January, we served 1,100 families.
Wow.
In East Hampton Town. No other town, East Hampton Town. Also, to define it a little bit more, there's a Springs Food Pantry, there's a Wainscott Food Pantry, and if people go to those pantries, they cannot come to ours. So
there are politics of food pantries.
Well, there's politics, but it's more because we're trying to divvy up as much as we possibly can.
Right. Delegate.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're a registered 501c3, mm-hmm. which means that we can accept money from anyone
who wants to donate. Wow.
And we are always looking for people. And we also have volunteers all the time for community service.
How can people get involved? I mean, my kids' school, for example, every time, several times during the year, they'll have big boxes set up and we can donate for the food pantry. This time around, it's the East Hampton Food Pantry. Mm-hmm. And now I know you guys are accepting fresh fruit and vegetables because that was new this year where they could, we were told as parents that we could donate. So I'm curious, how can other people get involved?
Well, we have like the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts. They do food drives for us, which is fantastic. But you could also come to the food pantry and volunteer your time. Like the distribution days are on Tuesdays and we're there from 2 to 6. So you can come and help us.
And it's easthamptonfoodpantry.org?
.org, yes.
easthamptonfoodpantry.org.
Yeah. And we also opened up a satellite in Amagansett. And we're there also on Tuesdays from 3 to 6.
Wow.
So if you want to help distribute, if you want to help pack up the bags, you could just...
How about meet the families?
Sure. I mean, you know, of course, when you're, you know, distributing the food, you're talking to the families, you get to know them, they come every week, they bring their children. It really is just such a wonderful experience to volunteer there.
Wow.
And I recommend that everyone should do it once, just to see what a difference you're really making.
Do you guys ever give recipes out with the food?
Well, we do, because Long Island Cares.
Right.
They will give us items from time to time, and they'll give us recipes. We do have people who don't know how to make venison, and sometimes we're given venison.
So you need to...
And so we need to have recipes for a venison chili. And we do have a volunteer who, so that we don't waste at the food pantry, every week takes our leftovers of vegetables and, say, venison, and she will create a meal for us for the next week, and she will serve the volunteers when they come.
So she'll serve the volunteers,
yeah.
and that's how you guys are recycling
well,
food. That's
we like
great.
To, while the clients are sitting there and waiting, because sometimes it's a wait. You
right.
know, they help out, and they can eat at the same time.
But legally, and this is my last question, we'll wrap out this segment, but legally you guys have to, you can't give out pre-prepared food, can you? Or like if I made a lasagna at home and I wanted to bring that to you guys to distribute to a family, could you do that?
That's a good question. And yes, we can, because we have a food handler's permit.
Yes.
So we do get a lot from the Ross School, actually. They donate.
Hey, Jason,
their food
you
sweetly.
And I.
Well, I have multiple recipes for venison, so.
Great.
Oh, wow. We're going to have a food pantry cook-off or something.
That would be great.
This
yeah.
is amazing. Well, thank you guys so much for being here
thank
and just
you.
Sharing
Thanks,
information and such a great cause. And if you're listening, definitely check out easthamptonfoodpantry.org. See how you can help, even if it's just donating some garlic or celery. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Stirring the Pot with Stephanie Sachs on WPPB 88.3 FM, Peconic Public Broadcasting, Southampton, New York, serving the east end of Long Island and southern Connecticut.
I want to leave everybody with some weekly actionables. Everyone's in studio now, so we're kind of going to have a free-for-all. I like to wrap each show out moving forward with what you can take away and you can start to do perhaps in your own life. The first is to check out my blog, Food Wasteland, at stephaniesachs.com, and it's Stephanie with an F. I say that because everybody spells it with a PH, and they can never find me. In that blog, you can learn what you can do about food waste. There are 10 different examples, and really easy, really simple, everything from just freezing food to buying less quantities. When buying pickles, we talked about Rick's Picks, seek the ones without the dyes. Please, yellow dye number 5. That dye alone makes up 90% of the food dyes used in our food today. And we're feeding a lot of that to our kids. Well, I'm not. Maybe you are. When you eat, start thinking about where the food comes from and what it went through to get to you, from growing to processing to preparation. And never forget, you are what you eat, but you also are what they ate. So that comes into play with animals. Always know that you can ask questions about your food, whether shopping or eating in a restaurant. And Jason promises to behave. Just don't go on July 4th really, really busy and send your food back 10 times. Understand and appreciate that hunger is a problem in our own community. And please do what you can to help. Everybody can do a little bit, a little bit. And if we all do a little bit, that will be a lot. With that... Any questions, guys?
Can I just give a real quick shout out to Meatless Mondays. This is a campaign that's in restaurants, but also that you can carry out at home. one day a week, make it Monday, eat vegetarian all day. It's like Kathy and Vicky touched on it really quickly. It's better for the planet. It's better for you. It's just a more efficient way to treat the resources.
And I love that you mentioned that because the Meatless Monday folks may join the show for a Meatless Monday segment.
Oh, fantastic. I actually just talked to Carrie earlier today, and she wanted me to make sure to give it a plug. I'm glad I got to do it. We do it on Mondays. We do three courses, a three-course price fix, $28 every Monday at the restaurant all year round.
That's amazing. And I love what they're doing, and it's something that everybody should try to do because it will make a huge difference.
Completely, and we're not asking for much. We're talking about one day a week.
One day a week to eat vegetarian.
Now, so what do you do in your restaurant on Mondays? Do you not offer meat, or do you offer a more specific?
We offer the regular menu, but then we always have a three-course price fix menu that's available. And on Monday, we make it entirely vegetarian, and we do it all night. The rest of the week, we just cut it off at 7 o'clock, and we just have a regular price fix menu. But we do it entirely. So we have three courses with three or four choices for each course, and it's all vegetarian. It's a good way for us to get our juices flowing and obviously to use what's the local harvest. And it sort of gives us sort of something to play around with, and it's just a lot of fun. And
you guys are open now this time of year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're open now. We do it every Monday. It's also, I mean, I'll be honest with you, it's another sort of profit motive thing. It's another thing for us to talk about, for restaurants to talk about, and for people to come in. I love provisions. I like Yamakyu, but, I think that I can make pretty good vegetarian food also, and we do.
Rock on, Jason. We love that. So Meatless Mondays, everybody, and hopefully they'll be an integral part of this show as well, because I'd like to promote that. I think it's a great thing. So thanks so much for tuning in, and thank you to our amazing, amazing guests, everybody here. Don't forget to sign up for my blog at stephaniesacks.com. And you can learn about upcoming workshops, speaking engagements, and so on by going to my website at stephaniesacks.com. Follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and if you have questions, post them on Facebook, and we can address them in the show. So until next week, and thanks for tuning in to WPPB 88.3 for Stirring the Pot. Stirring the Pot is presented by Naturopathica Healing Arts Center and Spa. For over 15 years, Naturopathica has been the Hampton source for holistically soothing massages and facials, complemented by their complete line of all-natural skincare and anti-aging products. Information available at 631-329-2525 or naturopathicaspa.com. And by East Hampton Dental Group, a multi-specialty dental practice with a caring, experienced team led by Dr. Mambrino and Dr. Venn. They provide many specialties of integrative dentistry all in one location. The state-of-the-art office is located in the heart of East Hampton Village. Information available at 631-324-6800 and ehdental.com. With additional support from Ross School, serving students in pre-nursery through grade 12 and beyond. With campuses in East Hampton and Bridgehampton, Ross offers a global curriculum in science, math, arts, and humanities, competitive athletics, travel, and college placement, and a wellness program featuring Ross Cafe's regional, organic, seasonal, and sustainable cuisine. More information on Ross School, including its summer camp and lifelong learning classes at ross.org.